It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We discuss the cherished French baguette and how to craft European pastries. Call in about French breads, desserts that transport you to Paris. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Jean Webb, owner and head baker of North Shore Boulangerie. Let's take call now. Jeff in Milwaukee. Jeff, hi.
Hi. So my question is about, like, when to visit a boulangerie. I'm assuming that a bunch of bread comes out of the oven in the morning, but is there, like, another shift of baking that gets done? When would you suggest coming by to get the best bread?
Jeff, thank you so much. Jean?
When your bakery is kind of operating on the classy schedule, first thing in the morning is the best time. And especially for a baguette, the long shape where there's a high surface to volume ratio, they dry very quickly. They're not a bread with a very long shelf life. So first thing in the morning, a baguette shouldn't be eaten straight out of the oven. That's something you do with American style bread. French breads need to sit on a wire rack for an hour or 2 hours, but usually the baguettes are out of the oven at least that long, maybe 2 hours before the shop opens, and then the baguettes are ready to go. The crust is at its crispiest, all the flavor from that browning reaction on the surface has worked its way into the crumb. Excess moisture from the crumb has worked its way out, and the crust has recrisped itself. It happens quite naturally. And so in those first couple hours when the bakery's open, it's the best time to go get a baguette. Some bakeries, if they're large enough, and we're not a huge bakery, they can sometimes do a second round of baking, but by and large, we don't. There is sometimes people will re-crisp a baguette, and that's something you can do at home quite nicely.
Yes. But yeah, how would you suggest reviving a baguette that's gone a little hard?
Well, once it's hard, it's almost over.
The relationship is no good anymore.
Right. You've got croutons at that point, okay, or crostini. But if the baguette has gone a little soft, which depending on the time of year, right, in August, that often happens. If your hydration level is a little bit high, the excess moisture can come out and soften the crust again a couple hours later. Toss it into a hot oven. What I tell customers is that, 400 degrees, 350, 400 degrees, and hold it in your oven until you start to see a little additional color coming on. If you see additional color coming on, pull it out. But then again, let it rest for an hour or so before you try to serve it.
Can we introduce the freezer here? Is there a best way to freeze dough or to preserve it for future baking?
The dough itself, no. Okay. The baked product. There are doughs that can be frozen. I've never tried to freeze baguette dough. I'm afraid that would the impact on the yeast would be too detrimental. The proofing and everything would probably be bad or not sufficient to get you what you want. But if you have a baguette that's on the lighter side and you want to hang on to it, wrap it up very tightly so that, today we have frost-free freezers, which means they're pulling moisture out of the freezer cabinet, and they'll pull moisture out of your whatever you put in it unless you wrap it up real well. And then you can hang on to it. Bread freezes quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And then bring it out. Baguettes, you sometimes can go straight from freezer to oven because they're thin enough and small enough for the heat to penetrate. Larger shaped breads probably should bring to room temperature before you try to put them back in the oven.
Okay, good to know. My colleague Trina wrote in a really wonderful note, has been making baguettes almost every week since they went to France at the end of last year, making them using a gluten-free brown rice sourdough starter, psyllium husk, brown rice flour, potato starch, olive oil, and salt, and says gotta have the baguette pan for ultimate crispness. Can you talk about adapting the traditional baguette for gluten-free or other sensitive diets?
Right. The set of adjustments that you just described would probably absolutely require the use of a baguette pan, those shaped pans that have their troughs that are perforated. Mm-hmm. But classically, baguettes, and that's because the recipe that you just described is probably on the weaker side. The dough doesn't have a lot of strength, so it needs a pan to provide its shape until it can be baked. Classically, baguettes are not done in pans like that. They're proofed on what's called couche, which is French for diaper. It's a cloth, a floured cloth. So it has to be able to hold itself up even during the proofing process. But it also, once it goes into the oven, it has to hold itself up. It goes the dough directly onto the stone without any support around it. So when you make those sort of adjustments and you do those sorts of things because the dough would be a little bit weaker and would require some support. But yeah, it's
possible.
It is possible. You just make further adjustments.
You mentioned mixers a little bit ago. What utensils or what is really helpful to have on hand when making baguettes?
I think one of the mixers, a mixer with a good strong motor. If you're going to do this frequently. A lot of the mixers today that are on the commercial market for home use have lighter weight motors because for most people, they're just doing batters and meringues, which don't take much power. So try to get a good quality mixer. If you can get a dough hook that is not rounded but is flat, that's helpful also. A flatter dough hook can actually grab the dough as it's mixing and stretch it, which is really what creates the strength. This is going to sound silly, but one of the most important things is once you have a baguette proof, you somehow have to get it into the oven, and you're working with basically this soft, delicate, really, really delicate noodle, large noodle, right? So you've got to be able to maneuver around the kitchen. So get a baguette flipper, or you can go to Home Depot and get a long flat board, and be able to move your baguette around that way. The most frustrating, I think, at home is when you've gone through this entire process and there you have this beautifully proofed baguette loaf that is
a work of art,
something longer than 20 inches long, and you have to stand there and figure out how you're going to get this unwieldy thing into the oven without destroying it. Even probably more important than the mixer is to have some way to get that baguette into the oven onto the stone.
My blood pressure is going up as you say that. We're talking about French baguettes and baking with Jean Webb, French-trained baker in the greater Milwaukee area, business owner. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Christina in Glenwood City. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. Can you describe the French sablé cookie and offer advice or even a quick recipe to make them to perfection?
Sablé cookies, yes. It's a sort of shortbread. We make a sablé every sablé stars. We just made a whole bunch of them for the holidays. If you look up on Amazon, a French pastry chef by the name of Jackie Pfeiffer. He's an Alsatian baker, so around Strasbourg, so that's why a Frenchman has a name like Pfeiffer. But he is one of the kind of world-known pastry chefs. And in his cookbook that he won a Beard Award for, actually the cookbook that came out a couple of years back, it was before the pandemic. And he has just a wonderful sablé recipe in that book.
I think I like them dipped in chocolate, or, you can make them in different ways, right?
Oh, absolutely. A sablé dough is very, very versatile.
Uh-huh.
Ours, for example, we put cardamom in it, flavor it that way. But yeah, it, and sablé dough is used for tart shells, for cookies. It's just a type of consistency. Sablé, the type of crumbling that it does, and the technique for getting the butter worked into it.
Mm, I need one right now with a cup of tea. I'd be good to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking of recipes, you shared a couple. One was for a baguette, which I appreciate because it's day one and day two. Mm-hmm. And the baguette with Louvain. I think that means leaven. Is that right? The culture there?
Right. It's actually, it's the yeast culture. It's
the yeast culture.
A wild yeast culture.
Can you walk us a little bit through the day one and day two? Give us a sense of what's involved.
So, you know, day one, it will be familiar to anyone who does sourdough baking. You know, Louvain is sort of the French cousin, or our sourdough culture is the American cousin to the French Louvain. Day one is you're just getting the culture up and active. This is Louvain is, and as well as sourdough cultures, are these wonderful, wonderful self-balancing populations of about 30, at least 30 different microbes, 10 different yeast, the predominant one being Saccharomyces cerevisiae, which is what we think of as bread yeast and brewer's yeast. And then at least 20 different bacteria. And so that culture needs to be fed. It's fed with flour. So you need to, it needs to be active. Often if, for, you know, our grandparents and great grandparents, they often kept these growing and they were growing every day. For a home baker now who may not do it every day, you need to at least take a day to get your yeast culture up and growing and active.
And this is your bread and butter, because I want to step in and say you hold a doctorate in yeast genetics.
Yeah, surprisingly, and as that happened, it wasn't a connection that I made until later in life. So yeah, absolutely. I find it remarkably interesting from multiple perspectives, but yeah, but the most interesting perspective is the flavor that comes out of these fermentation processes. That, you know, all those microbes working together, they balance out the population, and each one has a different role to play. Right, the bacteria that are in natural, we think of sour cultures and Louvain cultures as yeast, but there's a lot of bacteria in there. They handle the really complex starches and mm-hmm. break it down, so that the yeast, who prefer simpler sugars, simpler starches, just like us, as our GI tract and as our physiology works, and they just do wonderful things. Mankind has, I mean, maybe the Louvain should have UNESCO designation.
I knew that was coming.
I'm not sure who you'd give credit for. I mean, that there's folklore around that whole thing, but yeah, exactly. So yeah, day one, getting those microbes up and running, having them happy and growing at a good speed, and having the population all balanced, and then using that culture to leaven your baguette. Traditionally, early on. Although, I mean, today a lot of baguette recipes only use quick rise yeast and powdered yeast, but early on, all bakeries used these Louvain. Mm. When times get tough, I think we can still go back to that. I know, for example, when the pandemic hit, we were going, the supply chains were getting stretched, and there was no yeast, no quick rise yeast, which is used in other products, and so we. Reworked our recipe so that we could use what we were growing in the shop to make sure we could keep the products running.
Wow, that's really interesting. Gene Webb runs two French style bakeries in Milwaukee's North Shore suburbs. Call in with your questions about the craft of bread making, or share what you've learned in the kitchen. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. On the heels of France's iconic long bread loaf, the baguette, achieving cultural heritage status, we explore the art of bread making. still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Jean Webb is here, owner and head baker of North Shore Boulangerie with two locations in the Milwaukee suburbs. So, Jean, you know, how do you know you've got a good culture in day one of the recipe to take that sour culture into day two and be confident with it?
The easiest way is to once you on day one, as you're providing the culture with fresh water and fresh flour, you should start to see the culture expand as the yeast and the bacteria grow and the yeast are producing CO2. You should see your culture within, I'd say, 2 hours or so. You should see it start growing. And actually, this is an excellent point. Whatever vessel you feed it in should be clean, without any soap or sterilization residue, because that'll harm the microbes. But it should also be big enough to allow the culture to expand so that you're not, your culture doesn't kind of overtop whatever jar you're putting it in. But yeah, within 2 to 3 hours, you should start seeing it rise up and grow and get bubbly.
Okay. I want to just jump in here with Tom in Dubuque, Iowa. Tom, hi, go ahead.
Hello, good morning. Pleasure listening to your show. I have both successfully and unsuccessfully baked bread before, but I wondered if you could give some recommendations on coming up with your own sourdough starter and how best to feed that and when, how long it can be stored in the refrigerator before use. Thank you.
Excellent questions. It's very satisfying to start your own sourdough culture, but you have to be very, very patient. As I mentioned before, it's a self-balancing population of up to 30, maybe 40 microbes, depending on where you're at in the country. So when you first start, I mean, basically, if you just take a vessel with flour and water, it's a half flour, half water. That's considered by baker percentages to be 100% hydration. Microbes in the air will seed that flour and water mixture. But because the bacteria tend to grow much faster, they're much simpler and will initially outcompete any yeast that fall in there, your culture will be quite frightening for about the first 2 weeks. It will smell terrible because bacteria don't really smell good to us. But persevere and don't run. In time, sometimes 2 weeks, sometimes 3 weeks, sometimes 4 weeks, the yeast will start to get a foothold, and then the population will balance out. You can help yourself a couple of ways to maybe help this process along a little bit faster. You can drop dried fruit or fresh fruit, organic, unwashed fruit into the culture, and sometimes a little bit of malt syrup, because the yeast like the simple sugars, whereas the bacteria like the more complex starches. And so how the fruit helps is that if you've ever been out in the orchard and you picked an apple and you look at it, and it looks cloudy and you think it's just dust or dirt or schmutz, and you polish it on your shirt and eat the apple, that film, most of it is actually wild yeast. So if you can get an organic fruit that has not been washed and drop it in, you're actually inoculating the culture with these wonderful wild yeast. So you can help the process along. But really, it's be brave, persevere, and in time, it may take a couple of weeks, but that culture will balance itself out. That does mean that initially every couple of days, you're gonna start with a fresh vessel with flour and water, 50-50, and then add a little bit of the previous culture. It's important to keep feeding it fresh, but it will, as I said, in a couple of weeks, give you a beautiful Lavon or sourdough culture that is quite specific to your region, the terroir of that of your area, and will give you a wonderful bread.
Tom, does that help?
It does very much. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. We only have a few moments left, but I just want to acknowledge the other recipe you sent along our way. Find them at WPR.org/mornings. But the French country white bread with fermented dough. Any highlights you can share about this recipe?
The fermented dough is probably the first way that bakers leaven bread. Yeah, and it's a pre-ferment like Laban or sourdough, but it allows you to get started right away. You don't have an ongoing culture. You use dry yeast, make some dough, let it ferment, let the yeast grow, chill it, and then you use that chilled dough the next day to start in. And in those 24 to 48 hours, the solo kind of monoculture of S. cerevisiae will be able to undertake enough fermentation to provide you with a beautiful, beautiful flavor.
Okay. So would you consider that to be a bit of a gateway bread to bake, to try out if you haven't been baking much before?
Right, absolutely, because it's, you know, the shape is it's a batard, so it can fit in your hand. It's not so intimidating to move around the kitchen. It's a tight crumb bread with a nice French crust, but not the really aggressive crust that you usually want in a baguette. So yeah, I think it is. I think it would be a wonderful gateway drug.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Gene, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Gene Webb is owner and head baker of North Shore Boulangerie. We have a link to the baguette. We have a link to the French country white bread recipes. They're on our program page, WPR.org/mornings, to check them out. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.
Ha 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 ha!